This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Schizophrenia and Psychosis Action Alliance, shattering barriers to treatment, survival, and recovery. People with schizophrenia can recover and thrive. More at wecanthrive.org. This message comes from NPR sponsor, CFP, Certified Financial Planner Professionals, committed to acting in their clients' best interests. Learn more at letsmakeaplan.org.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Osea. When your skin glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow-up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's bestsellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion, to provide results you can feel. Glow from the inside out with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.
Hey everybody, Maddie Sofia here. This week has somehow already been a very 2020 week. Not great out there. So today we're bringing you one of the silliest episodes of Shortwave we've ever made from back in March. I promise it'll bring you some genuine science joy, which we can all use right now. We're back with a new episode on Wednesday. Oh, and if you haven't already, remember to subscribe to or follow Shortwave wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, let's have fun. You're listening to Shortwave from NPR. I don't know about you, but watching prestige nature documentaries is my idea of a wild Friday night.
The scorching sun means many desert animals only come out at night.
And there's a new one on Netflix, narrated by the amazing Samira Wiley, called Night on Earth, where a little desert mouse,
a tiny grasshopper mouse,
comes face to face with a scorpion.
Might want to steer clear.
This is in the Sonoran Desert.
Well, the Sonoran Desert is in, like, western New Mexico and sort of extends down into Sonora, Mexico.
That's Lauren Esposito.
I'm the curator of arachnology at the California Academy of Sciences.
Scorpions, a.k.a. arachnids.
Team Scorpion all the way.
Yeah, you see where this is going.
Hey, Lauren.
How's it going?
Oh, I'm so excited. That's Ashley Rowe.
I'm an assistant professor in the biology department at the University of Oklahoma.
Ashley studies the grasshopper mouse, which is, I believe this is the scientific term, adorable.
They're sort of like, they look like Mickey Mouse. They have these big ears and these big eyes and these long whiskers. And they just look really innocent and cute.
We absolutely had to get Ashley and Lauren together so we could learn everything about what happens next.
Many animals try to avoid venomous scorpions.
Everybody's got to eat, you know?
But not this little rodent.
In a flash, the mouse attacks the scorpion.
He's a scorpion-eating specialist.
Completely ignores, like, multiple stings to the face.
His body can block the pain from even the most lethal scorpion toxins.
And then rips the scorpion's tail off.
Sting disarmed.
Eats the scorpion.
Scorpion dispatched.
And then howls into the sky.
He claims his territory.
That was his tiny scream.
Yeah, they howl.
It's pretty adorable. Even I have to admit that.
This episode, a mouse versus scorpion showdown that seriously will blow your mind. I'm Maddie Sofia, and this is Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how her team makes an impact.
We always do what we like to think of as actionable science. So the work that we do makes its way to things like nutrition and physical activity guidelines for cancer.org, where millions of people come each year to learn about how they can better prevent cancer.
To learn more, go to cancer.org. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Viore. Jump into a new perspective on performance apparel. Vuori makes products that stand the test of time and hope to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives, empowering your best life in clothing that can be worn for just about any activity, from running to yoga. Visit Vuori.com/NPR to receive 20% off your first purchase and enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. Discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Quick note here on the mouse scorpion throwdown. In the Netflix show, that scorpion is called the giant hairy scorpion. For the purposes of this scholarly discussion, we've substituted the Arizona bark scorpion, also a scorpion this mouse likes to eat, but way more intense venom, and therefore cooler. All right, y'all, you ready to throw down?
Ready.
Yes, ready.
So as you both know, we don't want to make this feel, you know, too competitive. It's just a low-key, easygoing, science-based conversation about
two mortal enemies locked in a battle for survival.
Let's get ready to rumble!
In one corner, from the dry and fearsome Sonoran Desert, weighing in at...
Ashley, how much do these mice weigh?
Anywhere between 20 to 50 grams.
About an ounce. It's the grasshopper mouse. And in the other corner, from a little dirt hole under a rock down the hill, the stinger in the ringer, it's the Arizona bark scorpion.
So, we are going to break down this fight between these two little baddies and learn as much as we can about them in the next 10 minutes. Sound good?
Sounds good.
I think we can do it.
All right. So, Ashley, this grasshopper mouse, it's going out searching for scorpions. Is this like its primary snack, or what is it going after out there?
So in some areas, that is its primary snack. Grasshopper mice are distributed throughout short grass prairies and deserts in North America. Mm-hmm. So in some areas, they'll eat spiders, scorpions, lizards, small birds. They will eat other mice.
Birds? They're going
yeah,
up.
Yeah, birds, small birds.
Birds was the one that really shocked me. It's hard to imagine this tiny little mouse eating a bird.
Well, they do, actually. You can't house two males together. The males are really aggressive. Mm-hmm. So they will kill each other.
Yeah.
Do they eat each other when they kill each other?
They do. They eat the brain out.
No, they did. Esposito.
They eat the brain out?
They do.
Oh,
they
my. Will. No, yep. That's
they
so
will
crazy.
Eat the brain. Yeah.
I understand know. That podcasting is a audio medium, but I would strongly suggest our listeners at this point pull up a picture of this mouse because it
They're
just
so cute.
Does not fit the bill.
No, it doesn't. Like, you think, you see a picture of them and you're like, oh, this is a really adorable mouse. And then you learn that they kill each other and eat their brains out.
No, they're...
Do not be fooled.
Don't be fooled.
Don't be.
Okay. So, Lauren, when the battle starts, it's possible that the scorpion is ready with, like, a particular kind of venom for this situation. I didn't know that they had different types of venom.
Yeah, well, so actually, like, one single individual scorpion can produce up to 200 unique compounds in its cocktail of venom. Mm-hmm. And we have some preliminary evidence suggesting that they're able to express different parts of that cocktail in different circumstances. So if they're trying to defend themselves, they might be using the more expensive peptides that cause pain. Uh-huh. Or if they're trying to capture some prey, they might be using some of the less metabolically costly things like salts and enzymes that is all they really need to break down a cricket.
So cool. So, you know, these scorpions don't get enough credit out here. They're making different types of venom.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, these scorpions are really small. And when they're trying to subdue their prey, they just need to paralyze it really quickly so it can't get away. But when they're trying to defend themselves from their predators, what they really want to do is deliver a stinging blow that just stuns the predator and gets them dropped so that they can escape. Mm.
And I think what Ashley's referring to is this idea, this hypothesis that people have proposed called the venom conservation hypothesis, which is basically says, like, if your body has to produce things and those things cost you energy to produce, you want to use the least amount in any given circumstance, so you don't want to waste all your energy.
Honestly, same. You know what I mean? I'm never trying to do too much. I'm never
trying. I don't want to walk that far to the gym, to be honest.
Okay, so arguably one of the coolest parts of this is that the scorpion gives the mouse the old, like, 1-2 with a tail. Like, is sting the right term, Lauren?
Yeah, sting.
All right, so it just pops him, boom, boom, with some Sting vibes. After that, the mouse is like, you're going to have to do better than that, Scorpion. So, Ashley, what is going on?
Well, the short answer is that the mouse has evolved resistance to the painful toxins that are in the venom. And so they can get stung multiple times in their face. But the mice, at first, they just groom a little bit. Like, it is irritating. They're irritated by it. But then it's like the pain is just over. And then they just go in. They go back in for the attack. And then they just keep biting.
They get a ferocious look in their eyes.
Yeah.
And, Lauren, like, just to be clear, Arizona bark scorpions are not producing joke venom.
No.
It's pretty potent, right?
Yeah, so they can produce venom that could potentially kill like a small child. It's
wow.
No joke. I mean, it's really serious venom. And in some of their close relatives that live in like northern Mexico, those species are producing venom that could kill an adult, like a human.
Yeah, yeah. We should say that it's not like it just is resistant or whatever to this potential venom. Ashley, it makes the mouse more powerful in a way. What? Just tell me.
No, it's crazy.
So when the mice get stung, their pain pathway or the sensory neurons that make up their pain pathway, they're modified to the proteins in the venom actually block those pain signals. They bind to those sensory neurons and they actually block the pain signals. Then they're actually less sensitive to other painful stimuli after they've been stung. It's
wow.
Like it's like the venom becomes an analgesic for them. It becomes a pain blocker.
That is, I mean, Lauren, that's pretty cool. You got to give that up. I know you're Team Scorpion over there, but it's pretty
cool.
Look,
I'm Team Scorpion, but it's pretty cool. Like, if I could take something that's supposed to be, like, extremely painful and turn it into something that makes me not feel any pain anymore, that would be pretty epic.
Okay, so Lauren, you've described this to me as kind of like an evolutionary arms race between scorpion venom and the mouse's ability to resist venom. Tell me about that.
Well, what we think is that over time, the scorpions have to evolve stronger and stronger venom as a way to get around and escape these really super vicious, terribly awful mice. And so what happens is over time, the mouse gets stronger, the scorpion gets stronger, and it just increases for all of evolutionary history that these two have been in contact.
It's just like a tale as old as time.
I think, you know, the really cool thing about this whole arms race story is that it's because of the work that Ashley's been doing that we actually have direct evidence that they're currently engaged in this evolutionary arms race, because she's found that different populations are more or less resistant to the scorpions that live with them or in different places. So it's really because Ashley likes to experiment with mice and scorpions that we know they're locked in this battle for life.
We see you out here, Ashley Rowe. We see you
yeah.
out here. Okay, so maybe my favorite part, and I know this isn't necessarily something you guys study, is after the mouse kills and eats this scorpion, he throws his tiny little mouse head back, points his nose at the dark desert sky, and
he claims his territory.
I just love it. It's a very ferocious moment.
And if you're out there in the desert at night, especially around dusk, when they first start emerging from their burrows, you can't see them. I mean, it's really hard to actually see one out there, but you can hear them. They start howling or calling to each other, and it's sort of a, hey, I'm out here. This is my territory. Because they do. They have large territories, and they can't always see each other, but they can hear each other.
So in this video, obviously the mouse is coming out on top, but give me an idea of, like, is that most of the time the case, or are the scorpions mostly getting away? What's the situation?
So in the real world, we think the scorpions get away some of the time, yeah. And scorpions are amazing in that they know when there's a predator around. They can sense it. They feel vibrations on the surface of the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And they've got these slits and cilia on their feet, which are basically like tiny little ears in their feet. They're like vibratory organs that pick up vibrations. And so a lot of times they can orient themselves to the direction of an oncoming predator or prey that they just feel, and they know like how big it is because of how much vibration it's making and which direction it's approaching from. And so they're like ready.
God, I can't. These are such cool critters.
That was great. You just said little ears on their feet. I had not thought about putting it that way. I was struggling to like, what are those little, I know they're like, because yeah. I know, yeah, these scorpions, when we're out collecting, they know that we're after them. They're fast. They're actually hard to catch.
Are they? Ashley, you should just be bringing me.
Yeah, they actually come to Lauren when she calls them at this point.
Yeah, I do. I just do a whistle, just like those scorpion mice.
Okay, I gotta take you scorpion hunting with me the next time I go out.
Ashley Rowe and Lauren Esposito. By the way, Ashley and other scientists are still trying to better understand the pain-killing abilities of the grasshopper mouse to help design better, non-addictive painkillers for humans. If you want to read about that or more on either of these amazing critters, we've got you covered in the episode notes. This episode was produced by Brent Bachman, edited by Viet Le, and fact-checked by Emily Vaughn. I'm Maddie Sofia, and we're back tomorrow with more Shortwave from NPR.
With civil unrest, the pandemic, and the economic crisis, you want to know what's happening right when you wake up. And that's why there is Up First, the news you need in about 10 minutes from NPR News. Listen every day.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.